Hello, folks. Welcome to a brand new episode of Thanks for the Knowledge, Fanbyte's weekly news show rounding up the headlines in games and entertainment in one handy podcast. I'm your host, head of Fanbyte Media, John Warren. I hope everyone's had a great week. Hope everyone has a safe and exciting Halloween weekend. I don't think I have any plans. I'm very boring. But maybe, I don't know, maybe I'll just eat candy in front of a fire. It's kind of chilly here in Fayetteville. Anyway, we have a really jam-packed show. It is Fanbyte's third birthday. We turned three the day that this episode came out, October 31st. We started on October 31st, 2018, and the two amazing OGs of Fanbyte, Stephen Strom, Dylan Skiffington, joined me for a really wonderful conversation about the genesis of the website and also just how things have been over the past 3 years. It's a really cool conversation, especially if you're into, I don't know, just like the inner workings of how to start a website like ours. So, stick around for that. But first, we have to get to a jam-packed slate of top stories from this week. There were a lot of little stories that dropped this week, but I think the biggest story was probably Sony PlayStation's State of Play event. They do a lot of these every year now, since they don't really do those big E3 gatherings anymore. And this one we knew specifically was going to have to do with a lot of their third-party partners. So we knew we weren't going to see stuff about Horizon Zero Dawn, Horizon Forbidden West, or God of War Ragnarok, or any big first-party titles. Instead, we heard from a bunch of third-party titles. We thought maybe we would see some Final Fantasy 16, but no, we saw kind of a smattering of smaller, maybe more niche titles. So let's go through them. There was an interesting trailer that the show kicked off with called Deathverse. That's from Gung Ho. It's the sequel to Let It Die, which is a very interesting free-to-play action roguelike that came out from Grasshopper Manufacturer. Now Gung Ho is taking the reins. It's developed by Super Trick, and it looks very, very interesting. Kind of a bizarre survival action game. It's got some very interesting enemy and character design. Looks interesting. If you like really bizarre stuff, this one looks like it could be for you. We Are OFK is a multi-part kind of biopic music game about a real life virtual band, OFK. Kind of is how the band came together and how they are trying to make their way in Los Angeles. I thought the trailer was really impressive. If you like Teddy Deef has worked on games like Hyper Light Drifter, that's their game, We Are OFK. That's coming out in 2022. Bugsnax is getting a expansion called the Isle of Bugsnax. It's not called that. It's called the Isle of Big Snacks. I can't even read my own writing. And it's going to feature some giant bug snacks, as the title would imply. You'll see some returning characters as well. You'll be able to make and decorate your own village, which is exciting. And the bug snacks have hats now. And it's coming for free in 2022. Five Nights at Freddy's game Security Breach is got another trailer. It's a free movement 3D game in that franchise. Comes out on December 16th. It doesn't seem like it's going to get a lot of fanfare because everyone that loves Five Nights at Freddy's already knows about it, and everyone that doesn't probably just cares about the creator kind of being kind of a weirdo. So anyway, maybe the less said about that, the better. Death's Door, which is one of my favorite games of the year. I played it on PC earlier this year, and it's coming to PS4 and PS5 on November 23rd. And it is also coming to Switch on the same day. So that is super exciting for folks that haven't been able to play this because they don't have a PC. But Death's Door is one of the best games of the year, and now console players will be able to get their hands on it. Kart Rider Drift is a game that we've seen a couple times, but got a new trailer, and it looks like it's connected to Mega Man. I can't stress this enough. A lot of the character design looks like Mega Man, but it's not. I don't know why it looks like this, but it's not Mega Man. It's a free-to-play racer, and it's coming in 2022. SNK's long-running King of Fighters series is coming out with a new game soon. You probably know that already, King of Fighters 15. I got a new trailer. There's an open beta coming in mid-November where you'll get to choose from 8 characters, do some casual battles and things like that to test the game out before it releases. And the trailer also teased a character named Dolores. These games look gorgeous. If you haven't played a King of Fighters game in a long time, the art style of this game is really impressive. So that looks good. A social deduction game called First Class Trouble is coming out on November 2nd, so that's very, very soon, to PS4 and PS5, and it's also going to launch on PS Plus. It is similar to a PC game called Velvet Sundown, but it's also a little bit in the same vein of like Among Us. It's basically like a deception party game, but it looks a little more realistic in its approach with a lot more mechanics attached to deceive your fellow players. Looks pretty neat. Perhaps the biggest surprise of the show, at least for me, is a brand new Star Ocean game from Square Enix and Tri-Ace called The Divine Force. This is the first time we've seen anything from it. There's players that crash land on a planet, which is a pretty common theme for the Star Ocean games. You'll explore a big open world, it appears. You'll be able to do a lot of vertical movement by flying, and it's got a bunch of anime people in it. I love anime people in my RPGs, and it's coming out in 2022, which is pretty soon for a game that is usually as beefy as a Star Ocean game. The entire state of play wrapped up with kind of an odd choice, but I'm definitely intrigued. Little Devil Inside, which is a very cute but apparently very serious 3D action exploration mercenary game, which got a cool trailer last year. Got a like 5-minute trailer at this one, showcasing a Playmobil style overworld, a lot of side quests, a lot of mercenary action, killing creatures, a lot of like survival skills, fishing, cooking, surviving the elements. It was in kind of an odd trailer, a little bit like slow and measured, but it definitely showed a lot of the different gameplay that you'll be encountering in this game. And I'm really excited. I think this game looks really cool. The graphics are really breathtaking. It looks like a really nice showcase for the PlayStation 5. And I am definitely looking forward to get my hands on it. While it wasn't discussed at the state of play itself, because they didn't really focus on any first party stuff, Sony this week also quietly created a PlayStation PC label for its specific PC parts. So you can expect to see that label on games like God of War and also the Uncharted Legacy of Thieves edition. Days Gone, Horizon Zero Dawn, those are basically games that are from the same label, although that label was not created until after the fact. But it's interesting to see that this is apparently something that they're very much focusing on going forward at Sony to make sure that a lot of their first party games also come to PC at some point. Shuhei Yoshida also on Twitter this week showed Horizon Zero Dawn playing on the Steam Deck, which I think is very cool. Everyone made a lot of Vita jokes, which is great. RIP to the Vita. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how these really beefy games specifically play on the Steam Deck. So hopefully we'll be able to get our hands on one pretty soon and check it out ourselves. Conspicuous by its absence for many, many months during the ramp up to its release date on December 8th was the Halo campaign. We knew that the multiplayer was going to make its date because it had a really successful preview window, and we had a lot of fun playing the Halo preview. We had some thoughts over on fanbyte.com about the game, and it seems great. We finally, for the first time, saw some more details of the Halo Infinite campaign, which looks really interesting. It looks very open world. It looks like you can kind of tackle different settlements and missions at your own kind of pace. There will be skill trees for Master Chief to upgrade specific aspects of his kit, like the grapple shot, the shields, thrusters, how grenades work. The trailer showed being able to call down for a vehicle from a satellite. You'll be basically exploring the Halo Zeta, which is a very interesting interesting new Halo facility. And you'll be taking on a lot of new enemies. There are enemies with like health bars now and like names and stuff. It's really fascinating. A lot of stuff is coming together in a way that we haven't really seen for Halo in some time. But Halo Infinite will launch with this campaign. It's going to be single player only, not co-op yet. That's going to come out sometime next year. But the single player campaign and multiplayer stuff is coming to Xbox and PC on December 8th, which is very exciting. We're all very excited here to get our hands on that game. We knew Blizzard was going to change the name of McCree, the character from Overwatch, but we didn't have a new name pinned down until this week, and that name is Cole Cassidy. You can find that name already in the Overwatch game itself. And Blizzard even launched kind of a little explanation of the name change kind of in game. And this is what it says, quote, "The first thing a renegade loses is their name. And this one gave up his long ago. Running from his past meant running from himself. And each passing year only widened the divide between who he had been and what he had become. But in every cowboy's life, there comes a time when he has to stop and make a stand. To make this new Overwatch better, to make things right, he had to be honest with his team and himself. The cowboy he was rode into the sunset, and Cole Cassidy faced the world at dawn." Very cool. This is just the another change to Blizzard's internal workings to change a lot of characters in their games that are named after real people and take those out of the game for reasons that should, at this point, be fairly obvious. Speaking of Activision Blizzard, Bobby Kotick this week, the CEO of Activision Blizzard, released an extensive statement updating everyone on the status following the state of California's lawsuit against the company for cultivating a frat boy-like culture that made way for sexual harassment and discrimination, both in pay and hiring. This statement included a bunch of really interesting notes, which I'm going to go through right now. One, the company is enacting a zero tolerance policy for harassment. This means that while previous instances of harassment were sometimes met with verbal or written warnings, any substantiated harassment case will be met with immediate termination. This is some areas around the world have local laws that restrict those measures. In those cases, the company will still enact the strictest possible punishments for harassment. Second, the company will also be increasing the percentage of women and non-binary employees by 50% and investing $250 million toward that cause. The goal is to have women and binary workers make up more than a third of the company within the next 5 years, which is a very specific number. And on top of this, Activision will be investing $250 million over the next 10 years to initiatives that bolster underrepresented communities within the games industry. Those will include career opportunities in the ABK Academy, such as mentorship and apprenticeship programs leading to game dev jobs, which is interesting. Kotick says it's a meeting. The company is waiving obligations for arbitration for future sexual harassment and discrimination claims. This is in a contrast with companies like Riot, who have been asked to get rid of those arbitration obligations, but have failed to do so. So this is definitely part of the demands from the Activision Blizzard workers, and that's a pretty big victory. Activision Blizzard will also be reporting the results of its pay equity analysis to be more transparent with wages and demographics for its employees. And the company will be releasing quarterly progress updates on all of the above, as well as making it a pillar of its annual report to shareholders, which I think is going to be a pretty substantial victory to make sure that shareholders understand the gravity of this situation. What might be the most interesting and surprising aspect of this, and you know what, credit where it's due, Bobby Kotick is cutting his pay. He is saying while the company is going through this period of transforming its entire culture, he's going to reduce his pay to the lowest amount that California will allow, which is $62,500. He also claims that he won't be receiving any bonuses or equity during this period. Now, Bobby Kotick is an obscenely rich man without, he could make not another dime in his life and still have more money than any of us could fathom. But I will say this is one of those things that tells me that at least they understand that this, it comes from the top. I don't know if they believe that or if they're just doing the right thing here. But even the workers at A Better ABK, the movement of workers within the company who are pushing for leadership to change, called this a pretty big win. There are some caveats here, but I'll read their statement, at least in part. Quote, "While today was a huge win for us, we remain vigilant and continue to push for other industry practices that need to change. We still stand firm by our demand that the investigation must be done by an unbiased third party, of which WilmerHale is not one. We continue to push for light to be shed on other industry practices like crunch, which can be especially harmful to the health of game devs and especially the health of disabled and chronically ill game devs. We continue to give our unwavering support for our colleagues across the industry who are also pushing for change. A Better Ubisoft still has demands that are not being met. Together, we will be the change." This statement from Bobby Kotick and the Activision Blizzard folks seem to be going in the right direction. I don't think everything has been taken care of. Like I said, WilmerHale is an anti-union law firm doing the investigation here. They're probably not the right folks to be doing this third party this assessment, because it's not really a third party assessment that way. But for the most part, this is, I think, a pretty big victory for the workers of Activision Blizzard this week, and maybe across the industry if other folks take a stance similar to this one. Returnal is a time loop action game that is pretty good. Came out back in April and a lot of folks liked it. But one thing that folks really did not like was the fact that the long loops in this game, they are very long loops, could not be suspended. And that meaning like you could pause it forever, but you can't turn off your PlayStation, go do other stuff, because you then have to start a loop over. And these loops are pretty long. This was part of the gameplay loop, so to speak. and it was intended by devs to be this kind of difficult, but a new patch has been released for the game that allows you to pause a loop. So it'll basically allow you to suspend something and turn off your PlayStation, do something else, and come back to it later. That is a pretty nice deal, especially for folks that don't have hours and hours and hours to spend on some of the longer sections of this game. So if you've been hesitant to check it out because of that, or you bounced off of it because of that, now might be a decent time to go check it out. Shoji Meguro has been a game composer for Atlus and the Persona series for a very long time. He's written a lot of great music for that franchise. He actually resigned from Atlus at the end of September and announced it this week. He's leaving the company to focus on indie games that he wants to make himself, and he's doing that through the Kodansha Game Creators Lab, which is basically an indie fund there in Japan. He is leaving, but still wants to actually create music for the Persona series on a freelance basis, so it's not all doom and gloom for folks that still love his soundtracks in the Persona games. Final Fantasy XIV is going through some interesting changes with its terms of service. You can't really do real money trade. You can't do things to stalk other players, but you can still do erotic roleplay in Final Fantasy XIV. If you want to learn more about this, we have a really, really interesting piece over it over at fanbyte.com that Mike Williams wrote. It's amazing. It's a really cool news piece, so please check that out. But yeah, if you're worried about erotic roleplay going away in Final Fantasy XIV, you don't have to worry about that anytime soon. Digimon Survive is a new game in the Digimon universe, a tactical RPG. It was supposed to come out in 2021, but it's now being delayed to 2022. They released a statement that said, to Digimon fans patiently waiting Digimon Survive, first of all, we'd like to thank you for your continued patience and support from Digimon Survive. Our original goal was to launch Digimon Survive in 2021. However, due to the need to allocate more time to development, it is necessary to move the game's release to 2022. While the decision hasn't been an easy one, we want to make sure we use this extra time to enhance the quality of the game. The entire development team is working as hard as we can on the game, and we kindly ask for your patience. We look forward to sharing more news and updates about Digimon Survive with you all soon. Thank you again for your continued support, end quote. Whenever I see Survive, I now think of Metal Gear Survive, so I'm just imagining Digimon Survive. I also just always think about Digimon Otis, you know? You ever think about Digimon Otis? In late 2017, I was wrapping up a stint as a consultant on a couple of major video game projects, both of which I can probably talk about at some point, but this really isn't so much about me. I started to form a relationship with a group of folks in Los Angeles called Glitch City. And through Glitch City, I met Laura Mache, who is a game developer and a writer over at Riot, but at the time worked for XAM and actually worked in the media realm, doing basically games journalism for XAM.com. And Laura invited me to apply to a project manager position at XAM, running a few of their floundering websites. They didn't really have a ton of direction. They needed some help figuring out where to go from there. And I applied. Those consulting gigs that I had were not going well. I was rapidly running out of money. And Los Angeles is a tough place to be if you don't have any money. So I went and interviewed, and the rest is history. I've been working at XAM since the early 2018. And in late 2018, we started a website. We started a website called fanbyte.com. And the genesis of that is fairly interesting and tumultuous and exhilarating and fun and nostalgic and a lot of fun to talk about. So I invited the two folks that actually started the website with me at the company, Steven Strom and Dylan Skiffington, the senior managing editor and guides editor, respectively. I asked them to sit down and talk with me. This conversation is really fun. We definitely go into some detail. It's a little bit navel-gazy. If you're kind of bored at the idea of listening to us wax nostalgic about the inner workings of a website, you might want to skip it and just skip ahead. I don't know. But I think it's a really fun conversation. And it was definitely fun to reminisce about how things used to be and kind of how we got to where we are today. I hope to have another one of those conversations and again in a few years, because I think this has been a really fun journey and it's not anywhere close to finished yet. So enjoy this conversation. Hello, Steven and Dylan. How are both of you doing?
Oh, fine.
Fine.
I'm okay.
You're good?
Yeah. I'm honestly, I've got that Friday energy sort of welling up within me.
Yeah. That's good. I'm glad. I'm glad that energy. You know what kind of energy I've got? I've got birthday energy.
Birthday energy. Happy birthday, John.
Nope, not me.
How old
every
are
day
you?
Is John's birthday.
It's yeah. Do you remember when Keith, one of our developers, made up that I was like he used to post in Slack that it was my birthday every few weeks
and
like
yeah, it would get and everyone believed him.
Yeah, it was really good. That was a good bit. It's Fanbyte's birthday. This episode goes up on October 31st, which is the third birthday of our website/brand, which I think is that's really weird to me. I both feel like it has not been that much time, and I also feel like I've been working here for 20 years.
I mean, you have been working at the company that
it's only 4 years.
Only 4 years, really?
Yeah, it'll be 4 in January. So yeah.
Damn. Okay. Never mind.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like I've been here forever.
I guess it just feels that way.
Dylan's been here a while, but
like, yeah, 5, something like that. I don't know. But to be fair, we spent like 1.5 years of those 3 years in quarantine.
Yeah.
In COVID times.
Oh my God. Yeah. I think that's definitely the issue.
Yeah. I wanted to talk to both of you because you two really are the only OGs with me on the content side of the website. We started it, and I don't know. I wanted to take a stroll down memory lane about the funny beginnings and the weird middle and the weirder end. I don't know. I mean, it's not the end, but like, I don't know. I think it's been a really fun thing to build something, especially in those early days. It was amazing to build kind of what we wanted this to be together. I don't know if y'all like have any fond or otherwise memories from that, like the before times, like that September October before we actually launched. I think that was a very nervous time for me, but it was also exciting.
I mean, I feel bad because I feel like I've told this story about 17,000 times.
That's okay. It's fair. I won't say it's a good story, but it's an interesting story.
It's an interesting story. And I always lose track of how many times I've actually said it on a microphone versus how many times I've just said it to other people who work here. Colette, our wrestling editor, was just here in Fargo with me recently, and she asked me, like, so how long have you been at the website? And I was like, well, since literally the beginning and a little bit before that. because I was hired to work. Well, if you want to go all the way back, I worked at Zam.com as a freelancer for Danielle, Laura, and Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, before times.
That's way before times. Yeah.
Way before times. And then Zam.com, the website, went away and was replaced with a website called Ready Set. Ready Set was alive for about 5 minutes. It lasted about that long, I think.
I think it was about 4 months or something. It wasn't very long. Yeah.
Yeah. Was it on Ready Set that they broke the story about the vaping Republican congressman?
It was. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
That was also great because the person who I'm about to talk about told Chris, Loris Child, the editor in chief at Ready Set for those 4 months, told them, so just like break a story like that every week or so and the traffic will be great. All you have to do.
We can be honest about that. Yeah, that was my boss. That was my boss here before that. And he had very he had very bad ideas about how to do content. And yeah, he very much said, hey, you should just do this every day.
Yeah,
man. Which I don't miss the frustration of that. I'm glad that we are where we are now.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But I was hired by, I guess technically, well, Chris was basically my point of contact with all that stuff. Yeah. I was told, we need somebody to be the copy editor. Chris was the only person working full time at Ready Set and needed help.
Yeah.
So I was going to be brought in because Chris and I had bonded very heavily since the time at Zam.com over things like Yakuza, the video game, and Golden Kamuy, and a couple of other dumb, nerdy shit that we both really, really enjoy. And I was told basically, okay, we're going to hire you. And then 2 days later heard, actually, no, we need the person that we're going to hire to live in L.A. And I was like, well, I'll move out to L.A. And they were like, okay. And then I heard back 2 days later, actually, the person who was your boss at the time wants somebody who already lives in L.A. We're not going to have somebody who's going to move out to L.A. I was like, okay, fuck. And that was like that. Yeah. And then 2 days after that, I was told, actually, you're okay to work from Fargo. You're fine to work remotely after all. And I was like, okay.
Yep.
Finally went through all the process, got set up, got introduced on basically my first day. My first day was basically just practicing on stuff. Chris gave me some template type stuff to like practice my editing skills so that they could look it over and see what I was doing right and wrong and what they wanted me to do differently. Yeah. The second day, it was the morning. It was like my first real day of work, if you want to call it that.
Right, sure.
And Chris said that they were calling in sick to work. This is pre-COVID, so everybody was going into
the office. Yeah, we had an office in the Santa Monica area, yeah.
I love that I've reached the point in my life now where I have to try to remind people of what life used to be like.
I know, right? Yeah, it's true.
Chris was like, I'm going to call in sick, and then got a message saying everybody is being called into the office. And I think at that moment, neither of us talked to each other about it, but I think we both knew what was about to happen.
Yeah.
In retrospect, we have talked about it and told each other that we both knew what was about to happen, which was that Chris was laid off along with a bunch of other people.
Yeah, I think it was 15 or 16 staff members. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bad day.
I was not laid off.
No.
Because your boss forgot.
Barely knew you existed. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, forgot I existed, didn't know that, like, basically forgot to put me on a list of people to strike off of that thing, because it was such a blurb, such a blip on the radar of anybody at the company at the time. And because I was not included in those rounds of layoffs, people had to find something for me to do. And the thing that we were that we found to do was unnamed video game website.
Yeah.
Which became Fanbyte.
Yeah. Yeah, that it was called GameSite in all of our like internal like product management stuff. It was just called GameSite for a long time. And we didn't know, I can't remember the order of this, but at some point my boss who also had the bad content ideas, that he gave to Chris, wanted to change the brand of XAMN to something else. And so we had this very protracted, voting process where people were nominating things to call the company, and Fanbyte is actually what won. There were some real fucking stinkers in that list.
Oh yeah.
The most famous one was Bored Valley. So Bored Valley.
Like a place that you would go to if you're bored.
If you're bored is, I think, kind of the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but that was one of his, right?
Yeah, oh, that was one of his. Yeah, of course. Of course, of course.
Because that was the thing, was he was like offering a $5,000 bonus or something like that.
It wasn't that much, but there was some sort of bonus involved. Yeah.
There was a bonus involved, and you asked him, I remember at the time, because he had put in like...
He put like 50 of them in the spreadsheet. Yeah.
By himself, and whoever's name got picked was going to get some kind of bonus. And I remember you asking him point blank, what happens if one of yours get picked? And he's like, well, then I give myself the bonus.
Yeah, and he was dead serious too. Yeah, he was like, I'm gonna get the bonus. I was like, oh, all right, cool, great. That's neat.
The absolute like least self-awareness of any person I've ever met in my life.
Yeah, it was some dark stuff. Dylan, what do you remember from that like time where we were trying to like decide what the name of this thing was going to be?
I just remember us like, because we hated like 99% of the names in that list.
Yeah. I'm not even sure. I have to be honest. I'm not even sure I've loved Fanbyte. I mean, I think I was okay with it, but
I think it was the least worst.
It was the least worst. Yeah.
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 There was a bunch of them, and I just remember because we had this weird thing from our boss, which was the name had to be a mashup of two different things. Like,
yeah, it had to be like a compound BuzzFeed. Word. Yeah.
Right. Because he was very much. Yeah.
Yeah, because we wanted to be the BuzzFeed of gaming or whatever.
We didn't want to be, but he wanted
us
to be.
That is, for the record, what we were told that we needed to be as a company was the BuzzFeed of gaming for a while. Yeah.
But also, he couldn't really like decide what that meant, because he also like really wanted us to be. He kept saying we're going to be the BuzzFeed of gaming, and then also said, and we're going to be a wiki.
What he meant was he wanted to be as successful as BuzzFeed was.
Oh,
I feel like that. Well, that's not what he ever explained that to mean, but I feel like that's what he meant.
That's what he said a bunch.
Right.
You know, he was, and for as funny as these stories about him are, like,
they were very frustrating to live through.
They were very frustrating to live through. And he like did some actual, like really shitty stuff, and like was probably pretty racist about some stuff too. Like, not a good dude.
It was a very, frustrating time in the company's life. I'll say that much.
Yeah. It was a frustrating time. Yeah. I mean, I think the lead up to creating the website though, I mean, we wanted to do something that, I can't say enough about the foundation that Chris Lorischild, made with, obviously XAMN when they took over that site, and then also ReadySet, which I think had actually a pretty solid focused vision on what it wanted to be, and I thought it was very cool, and it didn't really get a fair shake, and then it, you know, we needed to close it down for various reasons, although I don't think I handled that particularly well. And then we wanted to make another go at a general game site, and I think we kind of had, I don't know, I felt good enough about insulating ourselves from the bullshit of the management that we had at the time, to create something cool, which is, I think, what was missing from previous iterations. There is a skill, whether it's admirable or not, there is a skill to playing the game with executives well enough to insulate the rest of the workers from something. And I do think I was good enough at that to get us the runway we needed to build something and make it last. But that was scary, though.
Yeah, I mean, it was scary. And like you say, you didn't handle that well. But
no.
But like, you were forced into a very bad position.
Well, yeah, we were pretty much unilaterally told to basically shut Ready Set down. And I think for various reasons that it did make sense, but I think I didn't know this at the time, but I probably should have probably stamped my feet a little bit more about how we did that and like right. actually figure out a measured and responsible way to basically move some content to a new site, which yeah. we still to be totally fair to myself and for the record, like, we still haven't totally done. I think we've freed like maybe 10% of those Ready Set pieces from our back end, and we need to basically do the rest, and that's something yeah. that I really want to do in 2022, but that's something that I'm not happy about how that went, but that was part of the transition process that we had to go through.
Yeah, it's just a technical pain.
It is a technical pain. Now, it would not have been if we had done it the yeah. right way, but that's not how it shook out. So, anyway.
It's weird now that we started with the three of us, and at this point I consider Merit, because we hired her so yeah. shortly after we launched.
She was very, very early.
Yeah.
Like a few months in. Now we're like 15 to 20. I don't even know what the number is. There's so many of us. It's the weirdest thing.
Yeah, it's probably closer to 20 now.
Yeah, it's close to 20 on the content side. Yeah, it's a lot. And I mean, I think everyone who listens to this and everyone who kind of watches our Twitch streams or listens to our podcast, they probably have an idea of, the 15 to 20 of us that frequently contribute to the content of the site and the brand. But you know, there are also a lot of other people like in ad ops department and development and
yeah.
Operations and things like that, that really make everything that we do go smoothly. You know, it wouldn't like we couldn't, you know, none of us have any sort of tech ops expertise to keep the site up and running and all that stuff. So there are a lot of folks besides the 15, 20 of us that touch the stuff on the website. So.
Shout out to Rocky. We miss you.
We miss Rocky. Yeah, we miss Rocky. We've got Travis now, but we definitely miss Rocky.
Travis is great.
I miss Coffee Boys.
Yep.
Coffee Boys
was a fun little. It was so good. It was a jaunt we would make every single day to the little cafe that was across the street, and it was really good. I saw Trent Reznor in that place once, which was fun.
And now Rocky is developing his new app. Weird.
Not Trent Reznor's app, but I hope Rocky's doing good.
Me too. He drove me around that first time I came to LA. I think it was that time I went there with Merritt, because that's how early Merritt was
first
trip we made out was together. And I got in first, and I got in early in the morning, and Rocky just like drove me around LA for a while. When I came in, like, just took me to the beach, which I had not been to.
That's fun.
I had not been to the beach, like the beach in Ocean Beach. I've been to many lake beaches up here, here in Minnesota, right. But an ocean beach I had been to maybe, including that time, probably three times in my entire life, if that, maybe twice. So he took me out there. He was just very nice. And now we have Travis and Ivan and Sanam, who's not on camera or podcast a lot, but she's our new designer,
because she's great.
She's incredible.
Yeah.
We love working with her. Any kind of visual thing that you see on the site now, and especially in the near future when there's going to be a lot more of it, on the site.
Yeah.
Is her.
Yeah, Dylan, did you think we would ever be able to execute a redesign the way we're about to?
No. Well, because, I mean, we ran so many websites.
Yeah.
you know, like we have a few different Hearthstone sites. We had our league website, all this other stuff, Overwatch website, and stuff used to take just forever. You know, we, through a variety of different factors, we were like grasping at straws, and that stuff used to take like 6 months, 7 months to do a basic redesign. And now I think back to like us launching Fanbyte, where we were like, screw it, we're just going to get a WordPress theme. And like, you, me, and Steven put the website together by hand.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah. That's why it looks the way it does.
It hasn't changed that much somehow.
Yeah. I mean, that's legit. I mean, I do think about that, how we, you know, this is a little bit inside baseball, but it does give some proper context. So I think the way the site's been run for a long time is that we basically shifted a lot of our focus with our developers from working on the websites themselves to working on basically ad technology and, you know, things that basically are designed to do monetization. So we had a really talented group of devs basically move from site ops to advertising stuff for like more than 2 years. And so we never really had anyone assigned to fanbyte.com, really. I mean, Ivan Espinosa, shouts to Ivan, has been basically the person doing a ton of that work, but it was, you know, a lot of WordPress themes. It wasn't a lot of like custom stuff. There were custom things that he built, especially on the back end, but it wasn't, you know, a totally soup to nuts custom job that required a ton of developers to work together to do. And now that we've kind of shifted our approach again over the past few months, we've gotten more, we've basically developed a core team of developers to move into more site ops stuff the way that we kind of used to, which means that we'll be able to build a lot more cool stuff on the site, whether it's like tools or whether it's like cool little features or custom widgets and things like that, that we really haven't had before. And yeah, like Dylan's not wrong. I mean, we put this site together in a lot of ways ourselves with these little functions in the WordPress backend. And it is a big reason why I think the website kind of looks like shit. I mean, it's like, it's fine. I think we did as good of a job as we could have, but like that was mostly three non-design minded people coming together and trying to build a website. And I think we did, I think we did a great job. I'm really happy about where we are, but that is a big reason why I think a lot of us are unhappy with the way the site looks. So,
yeah. I mean, we built Fanbyte the way I would build my personal website, not
right.
a website with 20 staffers. So it's time. It's time.
The thing with the website design that is just true of a lot of Fanbyte in general is like in those early days, one of the sort of many mantras I think we had was just like, it's better to just get it done no matter what it looks like or how good it is or how comprehensive it is.
It's got to be out there.
Yeah. Get it out there and then fix it later, not sit on it and talk about doing something for 6 months to a year.
Well, and that's kind of what we had been doing. I mean, to Dylan's point, I think we'd been so precious about this stuff. And I think, you know, a lot of things when they started to involve too many moving parts or taking a risk, we would retreat or we would sit on it or we would whatever. And I think like with Fanbyte, it was really important for us to just make things and let the content speak for the site instead of like the design of the site itself. And, I mean, for what it's worth, I think it worked. And now I think we have the room to say, okay, well, we love the content so much. We have to put some more love and care into actually what it looks like and how it's presented. So
yeah,
it'll be good.
We made the right decisions for the time.
Because, we did 100%. Yeah.
This is like right when it like literally because there's other dumb funny shit around it, but this is like right as the Facebook like inflations like number inflation stuff was going on where it was basically being revealed that all those sites that had been carved up and also faced their own layoffs due to various reasons, but oftentimes venture capitalists saying we're pivoting to video, you know, places like Vice getting slapped with that sort of stuff. Dorkly, a site that I freelanced for a lot before I came to work at Fanbyte, Merit as well, also freelanced over there. Shouts out to Tristan, who's a great guy. Dorkly is gone now because it was basing all of its content for Facebook and for video and pivoting to video and all of that stuff.
Right.
And so everybody else lost all their budgets and their staff and their editors overnight, and then was left holding the bag on a bunch of investment into a thing that was useless. Mm-hmm. And we launched a website that went in, against the wishes of management, the completely opposite direction, right? As there wasn't no competition. You know, obviously Waypoint is still out there. You know, a lot of other people doing like really good stuff, but there was like, those places were scrambling and trying to rebuild right when we were kind of just hitting our stride.
Yeah. 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 And we, you know, if you're listening to this and you've ever tried to look up something that we do on YouTube, you've probably realized that we have 3 YouTube channels right now, which like we're trying to change. We're trying to do some stuff, but like a lot of the videos,
we're trying to delete it.
We're trying to remove it. But a lot of like the video decisions we were making at the beginning of our website's existence, was directly related to my boss, the management, deciding that those reports that Laura Miche stood up and, you know, basically delivered to that management and said it is a bad idea if we invest all this stuff in Facebook. You know, he basically decided to just do the opposite, like Steven said, and a lot of investment was made.
He looked her dead in the eye after she said that and said, like, we're investing X amount of money into Facebook right now.
Yeah, because I
steamrolled her.
Because I think, he did steamroll Laura. And I think, like, the other part of that is he had probably done a multi-month pitch and presentation to the board of directors to convince them that this is the budget that needed to be freed for this. And then he was not even going to entertain the idea that he wasn't going to do that. And one, that's like, you know, the sign of a bad leader, first of all. it was one of those things that, you know, it's like we probably could have spent a lot of money in a totally different space and had not a better first year, because I don't want to say we didn't have a good first year, but we probably could have had a fairly different first year if we'd had budget to spend on things like writers and other experiments we could have done instead of boosting Facebook video for stuff like reposting trailers and stuff like that. Right. which was really shitty. And yeah, I mean, we got bamboozled after the fact. Like, we knew we were being bamboozled and still did it, you know? And that was a frustrating time. That was a really frustrating time.
And if it sounds like we're resentful about all of that stuff and kind of like pinning a lot of this and like our early struggles on that authority in management, it's because we are. And it's true.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's because so many things are different now. Like, I think that's been really the key difference to make us go to feel like we have the freedom to say that stuff, is because, you know, a few things happen, and I won't get into those details, but a few things happen where that management is no longer working here, and then a lot of things started to change, right? So I think really that was in late 2019 when those shifts happened, and then since then I think we've really hit our stride. We've worked with some amazing folks. I don't know. Like, do y'all have a cool, like, coolest thing, thing you're most proud of? I don't know. It's cheesy, but I'm curious about what both of y'all think.
I mean, I'm still just perpetually surprised that the Animal Crossing stuff we did, just because I had no expectations for that.
And then one day Dylan made one tier list, and then suddenly it became his entire life's work.
I mean, it. I can't stress this enough, folks. It literally transformed our traffic. Yeah, I went from like it is. What was it? I think we did like a yearly report or something. It was like, I don't know, 40% of our traffic or something.
Yeah, yeah. To this day, it's still like our top 10 articles combined.
Yeah.
Into that one. But yeah, no, I literally just, I was like, you know, what if I do this? That would be fun. And I took like a week to work on it, because it's 350 villagers or something. So like, you got to figure out a format. You got to get all those images. It's a whole lot of work. And then a week later I posted it, and then it was off to the races, I guess.
God.
I don't know. It's just a wild, it's just a wild, wild thing.
But, and you've had other moments like that, I feel like, throughout history. Because John said, specifically, you said the words, like, it transformed our traffic. That happened, like, 15 times early on. And it was always just, like, leapfrogging. It was always just, like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Teamfight Tactics completely transformed our traffic.
Yeah, Teamfight Tactics came out. Teamfight Tactics came out, which is a footnote, frankly, in the history of games. In the
history of games and Fight Night, for that
matter. But it was the biggest thing that we had for, like, a month.
It was basically 2 years of just doing that repeatedly. I don't know. That's probably the wildest thing. Things have calmed down now that we've gotten bigger, but that initial growth was just wild.
Yeah.
And it was always just like one new thing. And some of them, like Teamfight Tactics, turned out to be flashes in the pan. But then, like, Destiny has just become, every time we did, you know, five of those transformative games, like, one of them would stick around and become like a pillar of stuff on the website. You know, Destiny 2, Animal Crossing is still pretty up there. Genshin is doing very well for us. Final Fantasy 14 has obviously done so well in the background that at some point somebody being John was like, what if we just launched an entire vertical for the website about it?
Yeah. And by the way, nobody thinks vertical stuff is going to work, which I think is funny. Like, that there's a sentiment online that because like the Overwatch stuff that Polygon did didn't work, is that the vertical stuff just doesn't work within a thing. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. I just think it's how you cover it. And so I think this experiment will be interesting to see how the FF14 stuff does, but we'll see.
This is getting off topic of, like, Fanbyte specific stuff, but I think, like, I mean, you know, the link shell, the Final Fantasy 14 vertical, it's part of Fanbyte now, so yeah, it's worth talking about.
Sure.
But I think the thing with the verticals is that a lot of people, Polygon, a great website, but full of a bunch of great people, like, don't get me wrong, but if you talk about their verticals not doing well, like, a lot of those verticals are based on things like esports, and esports is a scam. I say that as somebody who used to work almost exclusively in esports.
I say this lovingly to people who love esports, but esports is no one's figured it out yet, and it's I don't think the esports hasn't figured out esports yet.
No. I think it was my former coworker at Red Bull, my first job out of college, Rob Zachney, put it this way, also a friend of Danielle's, which is that, like, in esports, they're like, a bunch of people with money look at esports and say, holy shit, there's like 150 million people every week say that they watch esports. Like, that's bigger than football. That's bigger than anything or whatever. Uh-huh. It's like, yeah, but football, basketball, baseball, there's usually like a lot of crossover between those audiences.
Yeah.
In esports, you have 10 million people who are interested in one game. And then of those 10 million, maybe 500,000 of them are interested in esports for that game. And then there's 65 other games that is splitting that entire thing up. And they don't, those communities don't talk to each other.
No, they
and
don't.
Those people aren't interested in the same thing. Final Fantasy 14, like, the way that we're covering Final Fantasy 14 and the way we kind of at the jump decided we wanted to cover games, it was a thing that we talked about a ton during GameSite days, capital G GameSite, was covering live games, covering things that are going to be they're increasingly, video games just look like this, even if it's just like FIFA,
right?
It's 65 different indie roguelikes that take, you know, an hour or whatever, and they become like something people play on their Switch, or everybody has a game that they play every day, like Destiny, like Warframe, like Genshin, or whatever.
Sure.
And you can't cover those games like old sites like GameSpot and stuff like that were built to cover games anymore.
Right.
And those sites are also realizing that. They've been realizing it for a long time. It's been, and a lot of the people there have known that for ages. It's convincing management to shift to that direction that is the problem. Whereas we got to build a site from the ground up focused on, like, we're going to have somebody who's really good at knowing what this game is all about so that they can cover it. And somebody who's really good at covering this game. Dylan is great at that for Genshin, for instance.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I was, for a long time, in video, in like mainstream video game criticism, I was like, the only person covering Warframe for anybody. Yeah. So I was like working for PC Gamer and Games Radar and Rock Paper Shotgun, going to TennoCon and stuff for that, like that, for years. And then when I came to Fanbyte, all those websites also realized that it was time to start covering Warframe. So now there's a bunch of people doing it. But
yeah,
not to toot my own horn too much.
But. No, toot it. I love tooting.
I'm always talking about beans.
You are always talking about beans. That's true.
Too many beans.
Beans. I remember that first E3 that we had in 2019 where folks came to LA. That was a lot of fun.
First and like only at this point.
Yeah, first and only, really. Yeah, we had the weird last year thing, and then the weird this year thing, and then who knows if there'll be another one. But that last one was that was a lot of fun to have folks in LA and make some stuff. I think we were all really burnt out by the end of it, but it was fun to see everyone in LA.
Yeah. I still think about GDC and all of us going to the convention while Steven is staring at a screen like 8 feet up in the air that's like 15 inches wide.
Sekiro. Sekiro Shadows Die Twice came out the week of GDC, and we got a code, I want to say maybe like the morning that we flew out there or something. You brought your PlayStation, and yeah, we were set up in this nice hotel, but the hotel room had its TV, which was, I don't know, maybe like a 30-inch TV, up on the fucking wall, like 16 feet above everyone.
Yeah, it like recessed into like a brick wall.
Yeah, right. Yes, and that the fact that you played a lot of Sekiro on that TV, that was very funny. Yeah,
yeah,
that was very funny.
I think I got to the first Genichiro fight, the first real Genichiro fight where he has the lightning powers. I think I got like that far, which is like the first big inflection point of that game. So yeah. I made a lot of progress.
God, that was fun.
That was very, it was super fun. I love that game.
Yeah.
As much as I don't miss conventions, I miss conventions, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I do too. I mean, like I definitely don't miss them in a vacuum, I don't think, but to me, what they represent is just being able to get together in a, exciting professional environment with people I really like. And I do miss that a lot. Yeah.
that first E3 was also the E3 where it was the first E3 where we had Merritt with us. because again, the only one. That was also the day that your former boss basically took Merritt and I out to dinner separately.
Yeah.
To lunch.
Yeah.
That first day to basically where we didn't eat anything. He just took us to a restaurant and asked if we wanted anything. Yeah. And like basically tried to, it was like not on Survivor.
Yeah,
he was like trying to turn us against you.
Yes, you know, yeah. I was about to say that's how it should be phrased. Yeah,
it's like it's like if you're watching Survivor and then they have like the cutaway to like two people standing in the forest talking about how they're going to make an alliance in the middle of the night, and then like the next day the person is like, "I'm betraying my best friend," whatever. Mm-hmm. He was like trying to pull that off, but like Merritt and I were just like not having it. whatsoever, and just like smiled and nodded the whole time. I can't speak for Merritt, but I remember just like smiling and nodding, and like at the time not realizing I think how bad he was, and I was trying to almost do the same thing to him, where I was like trying to nudge him in the direction that you, I, and Dylan were talking about, which was like, yeah, we should be doing things like cross-linking, like linking to our other material and our other things or whatever, and he's just like, yeah, wikis. And it's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, let it be known that in a different world, fanbyte.com would basically be a wiki farm, essentially. Yeah. And that was the desired future of that website, and I fought very hard for that not to be the case.
Which wiki are you using, Fandom or Fanbyte?
Right, exactly. God.
That would have been a nightmare.
Exactly. That would have been basically the conversation forever. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he wanted. He kept using Fandom as like the example, because like his whole philosophy on things was just like looking at other things that were successful and saying like, let's just do that again. And it's like,
let's do that again and not spend any money on it.
And not spend any money on it.
Yeah.
Crucially.
And it's like, no, we can't do that because that already exists. Like, people are already entrenched on that thing over there. They already are served. And also, if we're going to try and outpace them, we need to outpace them. And we're not going to do that with two people.
No, we're not. Yeah, yeah. With and yeah, yeah. He always wanted us to pay rates of some of our competitors who, frankly, underpay. I won't name names, but it's like he was very adamant about always saying, well, you know, this big outlet only pays, you know, $10 a piece or whatever. So why aren't we doing that? Or we should do click per like a pay per view kind of thing. Like if something pops off, okay, then we pay them an extra few dollars or whatever. And I don't know. I just can't stand that shit.
We could have been all the bad shit that
we could have been all the bad shit. We could have very easily been all the bad shit.
A lot of our freelance methods and methodology now was just like, I remember you and Dylan just coming to me and basically saying like, well, how much did you get paid by Ars Technica or whatever? And me just being like, well, this much. And this is the best rate I ever got. This is the worst rate I ever got. And I can tell you, as somebody who freelanced for 10 years, I hated getting this rate. I won't name names, but they're like, yeah, there are some very, 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 very big sites out there that pay literally at least when I was working there, they might be better now, but they were paying 1/15 of what we pay right now.
Yeah. And I mean, listen,
their writers compete for the slots
too. Sure. And listen, I still think there's room to grow. I don't think we're like the best in the biz. I don't like when I see some folks, some outlets and they might have just bigger budgets because they do better from a financial perspective. I have no idea. I still think there's room to grow there, but yeah, that was a core philosophy of just like doing better, doing it faster. Like that's another thing. And I'm glad we had the room to do it. I don't know. Sometimes I'm shocked at the number of things that we actually ended up getting right. But I'm glad that we did.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Here's to another 3 years. I genuinely, truly mean this with all sincerity. Cannot imagine a better duo of people to start a website with. So
thank you so much, John.
Yeah.
I don't take compliments well.
I know you don't. Yeah. I know you don't take compliments well. You blush and you make that little face and
sound like my wife.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Beating your wife was a high point.
Oh my god. In
my history of my website.
Yeah, that's true.
She rules.
All right. Well, thank you both for hanging out and strolling down memory lane with me. I appreciate it.
Of course.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, I hope y'all enjoyed that conversation. And we'll have a lot of special stuff coming up this next month on the website. We're going to have a new redesign coming up and some really fun streams. So like keep your eyes locked onto the website and all of everything that surrounds it. Super excited about everything we've got going on. And I'm super excited to be at a place that, you know, has been so much fun to work at for 3 years. Let's get you ready for this coming week, because there are some game releases we have to talk about. Giants Uprising is coming to PC on November 2nd. World War Z is coming to Switch on November 2nd. Bloodshore is coming to PC, PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, and Switch on November 3rd. Time Loader comes to PC on November 3rd. Demon Turf, and that is T-U-R-F because T-E-R-F, that would be redundant, Demon Turf. Anyway, that's coming to PC, PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, and Switch on November 4th. Just Dance 2022 comes to PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X, Xbox One, Switch, and Google Stadia, of course, on November 4th. Pinchcliffe Grand Prix comes to PC and Switch on November 4th. Space Lines from the Far Out comes to PC and Xbox One on November 4th. Star Sand comes to PC on November 4th. To the Rescue comes to PC on November 4th. The big Animal Crossing New Horizons update 2.0 comes to Nintendo Switch on November 5th. We should have a ton of new info and guides for that game around that time. Maybe not right on the 5th, but probably around it. As well as the Happy Home Paradise DLC, which comes bundled with the Nintendo Switch Online expansion pack if you haven't already picked that up. Imran Khan says it's not a very good deal right now. And you know what? I tend to agree with him. But if you have to have those Genesis and N64 games, as well as Happy Home Paradise, then the expansion pack is probably the most cost-effective way to get all of those things at once. I have no idea. The big one is Call of Duty Vanguard coming to PC, PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X, and Xbox One on November 5th. And finally, Mobile Suit Gundam Battle Operation Code. This is a very long title, and I want to make sure I get it right. Mobile Suit Gundam Battle Operation Code Ferry Volume 1. Thank you. Comes to PS5 and PS4 on November 5th. So a lot of big game releases. That Animal Crossing one is probably the biggest. I think that 2.0 update is a pretty substantial one. Of course, if you're in the Call of Duty, it's a huge week for you as well. I'm a lapsed Call of Duty player myself, but hey, I don't know. I may check it out since I was pretty underwhelmed by Battlefield 2042. Although the new Halo game looks very good, and that's probably the shooter I'm going to be playing most this holiday season. Speaking of Xbox, let's talk about what's coming to Xbox Game Pass this month. On November 2nd, the Minecraft PC bundle comes to Xbox Games Pass. If you have not gotten your hands on one of the most popular video games to ever exist, this would be a great time to do it. Minecraft is a super interesting sandbox. Your kids play it. Your friends' kids probably play it. A bunch of YouTubers you don't like play it. There's a reason it's one of the biggest games ever. It's because it's a superb title. So if you've never checked it out, it's a cool, chill experience, or at least it can be a cool, chill experience. There's a ton of other stuff coming to Game Pass in November. I will remind you of these things throughout the month, but Football Manager, Forza Horizon 5, those come on the 9th. Grand Theft Auto, the San Andreas Definitive Edition specifically comes to Xbox Game Pass on November 11th. Elder Scrolls 5 Skyrim comes to the Game Pass on November 11th, and that's the Anniversary Edition. That's the big fancy new one with some of the graphical flourishes and the mod capabilities and things like that, so that's good. Microsoft Flight Simulator Game of the Year Edition comes to Game Pass on November 18th. Undungeon comes to Game Pass on November 18th. Evil Genius 2 World Domination comes on November 30th. And that's all we know so far. We don't know what is coming to what is leaving Game Pass yet. We don't know those things yet. They usually announce those kind of as they happen. But PlayStation Plus subscribers, switching to that for a second, you'll be able to get, the Social Deduction game, First Class Trouble, which we talked about earlier in the State of Play earlier. That's coming to PS Plus. Kingdoms of Amalur, specifically the remastered edition, is coming to PS Plus, as well as the dodgeball game Knockout City. You will also be able to get some PSVR titles, The Persistence, The Walking Dead, Saints and Sinners, and Until You Fall. Those will go live on PlayStation Plus on November 2nd. And if you're not watching Succession, you should be watching Succession. Listen, I'm sorry I keep bringing it up, but it's a really good show. And if you like that show and you want to hear Funke, Joseph, and I talk about it, we'll be doing that every Monday while the show is on over on Twitter, Twitter Spaces. That's just a fun little informal chat about the previous episode that we're doing on Twitter Spaces on Mondays at 12:30 Central. So that is like 1:30 Eastern and 10:30 Pacific. Okay. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this week's episode. I want to thank my guests, Stephen Strom and Dylan Skiffington. If you want to follow Stephen over on Twitter, you can at Stephen Strom. If you want to follow Dylan over at Twitter, you can at Squiblon. If you want to follow me, you can follow me at Floppy Adult. And if you want to follow Paul, my wonderful producer, you could do so over at Polly Mayo. We can be found, the entire website can be found at Fanbyte Media. All of our podcasts can be found at podcastnet.org. Our Twitch account is twitch.tv/fanbyte, which is a lot of fun. We're doing a lot of streams lately, and it's been a blast. I've been enjoying meeting more of our community. And speaking of community, if you want to join our community, you can do so at fanbyte.casa. That is fanbyte.casa. That'll take you to our Discord. It's got a lot of wonderful people in it. There's a pets channel where everyone just posts pictures of their pets, and we all just fawn over them all day. It's like the happiest place on earth. It's a really cool place to discuss games and other stuff that you like. And I don't know. I think it's a great place to be, and I think you should be there and come hang out. So I invite you, cordially, formally invite you to join our Discord, fanbyte.casa. All right, folks. Thanks again for hanging out. And until next week, you're welcome. Thank you.